This podcast contains adult themes and language. Magic is not for the faint of heart, and listener discretion is advised. If this is your first time here, let's get back to episode one.
Black's the night, dark's the soul. Tell me now, make me whole. Red's the color of blood and death. Take the bones and give them breath. Black's the night, dark's the soul. Tell me now, make me whole. Red's the color of blood and death. Take the bones and give them breath. Black's the night, dark's the soul. Tell me now and make me whole. Red's the color of blood and death. Take the bones and give them breath.
Not far from Wichita, Kansas, there stands a bridge. To locals, it's known as Theros's Bridge, named for the spirit who haunts it. There are many versions of the legend of Therosa, but almost all of them center in some way around conflict between Native Americans and white settlers, and the tragic loss of an illegitimate child. In the version Bailey tells, Therosa was a young Native American woman.
It's about to get dark for a second. Basically, the story goes that she was running from a bunch of white men who were coming after her because they believed that her baby was a white man's baby and that they needed to rid her of it or something of that nature. She made it to this bridge, and before she could jump off, they got her and they raped her and killed her. And apparently the story goes that they cut out the baby and did something with it. I don't know what that means. The myth goes that if you go to this bridge, which is actually outside on the outskirts of Wichita, it's not really in Wichita. If you go to this bridge and you yell three times, Therosa, I have your baby, Therosa, I have your baby, Therosa, I have your baby, then she will appear to you and she will make things happen and she'll like fuck with your car and she'll do all these things, right? So that's the mythos behind it, right? Now, to us, it wasn't about going and fucking with Therosa. It was about going and investigating this and seeing if this was real. Now, we never went. We never said, Therosa, I have your baby. We've never done that. But we would go, and it was more of just like a cool thing to do, was to like go and hang out on this bridge.
In 1974, the original wood bridge burnt down. After it was repaired, it burned down again. And in 1991, the bridge was rebuilt in concrete, and it still stands today. But according to some locals, this is not the location of the real bridge. So naturally, when Bailey was in high school, he and some friends ventured out into the woods to find the real thing.
We walk out into the woods, and we walk for about 10 minutes, not very far. And we see this little wooden, termite-ridden, falling-apart, scary, spooky-ass bridge.
Yes.
And it's got graffiti all over it, and it's just falling apart. And we're like, oh, fuck.
This is it.
So we start walking up to it. As we're standing there, it's very, very quiet in these woods, okay? Except for you can hear some crickets, but it's very, very quiet. Oh, and now and then you can hear the frogs, okay? So the frogs will just go, rang, rang. Right. It's pretty rare. All of a sudden, all at once. Now, I know this happens all the time in nature, and this is just a thing, but it just was the perfect fucking timing. All of a sudden, all of the frogs, all at once, And they just go. And they just go forever. And that's exactly how it sounded like. It was like an alarm that was building up, and it just exponentially grew. And it went for about a minute before it would die down.
So crazy.
And then it would happen again, and it was actually scary.
It's a scary sound
because it's super loud. They're everywhere,
and you realize how many of
you
them
realize
there
how
are.
Many of them there are, and how close the sound is coming.
Yeah.
From, in terms of where you are, you like look down and they're there. So it's like they're everywhere, and you're slapping
dozens of you little.
Yeah, and you're slapping mosquitoes off you at the same time while also trying not to like. Be spooked yourself, and it's just everything is just freaky, and the frogs are jumping over your feet. That freaked us out enough, so we're all like, okay, let's go back. It's witching hour. It's time to go. So we all start leaving, and we get back, and I had driven my truck that night. We get back, and we go to get in the truck, and I search my pockets, and my keys are nowhere to be found. And I go, all right, guys, empty your pockets. Who has my keys? I know you're fucking with me. This is ridiculous. No, nobody has my keys. So I say, all right, the only place they can possibly be is in the woods. That's the only possible place they can be.
Somewhere in the fucking woods.
How I did that, I don't know. I'm wearing deep jean pocket, like they're... I didn't pull them out. I didn't pull anything out of my pocket while we were in there. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, boy pockets are pretty...
Boy pockets, things don't fall out of them.
You guys have, like, a full pocket.
Yeah, so I'm freaking out. Okay, yeah. It's also my dad's truck at the time. It wasn't mine yet. So I was just... It was very, freaking out.
Are you the only one who drove? So, like, you're the way out.
I'm the way out. And we ended up going back into the woods and searching for my keys for... solid hour, and the frogs just kept doing that. Every couple minutes, they go back up and they go away. It was so scary, and so we finally found my keys, and they were just sitting on the trail. They're just—it's not even a trail. It's like just the embankment next to the creek. It is big enough to walk on, so that's what you walk on.
Maybe they didn't fall into the water.
Yeah,
or
that would have been horrible.
Or like off the trail,
or anywhere in the bushes. Yeah, because that would have been the worst. Then this is the part of the story that I don't necessarily truly believe in, but it is completely agreed upon by these two people that it is completely true. Jace, as I said earlier, and his cousin were with me, and as we were driving away, on this dirt road, the dust was flying up really hardcore, and right at the exact same time, both of them jumped and kind of screamed, like a mini scream, like right, at the same exact moment, but I didn't see anything. They both jumped, scared the crap out of me. I was like, whoa, what, and they said, did you see her? What? And they're both going, did you see that woman? Did you see her? Did you see that woman? I was like, what are you talking about? That woman in the white dress.
In spite of Bailey's doubts, this story seems important to me. I asked him if he thought one of his friends who was there that day might be willing to talk with us.
Hey, what's up, dude?
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm good. It's been a while.
It's been a long time. I was glad you messaged me back. It's been a couple years.
Yeah, no, of course. It sounds like a cool idea. I'm happy to, share some stories, I guess.
For sure, man. Yeah. So the story in particular that I wanted to ask you about is, can you guess?
The Rosa's Bridge, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. That was probably one of the more significant encounters with some sort of I was gonna say extraterrestrial, but that's not the word. It's like supernatural.
Yeah
thing. Yeah, my life for sure,
right? But, yeah, well, okay, yeah. So I kind of wanted to get a few things from you. First of all, great to talk to you again. It's been a long time.
I was
trying to remember the last time I saw you, and even though we may have like barely seen each other since then, but that might have been the last time we actually really hung out.
That was like one of the last last times we spent like a lot of significant time together. Because yeah. It's pretty quickly after that you were gone.
Very true.
But
yeah. So I guess in general, we just wanted to ask some questions like, what do you remember about that? What you know about that that situation? In particular, what I really wanted to ask you about was when
we saw Therosa.
Is that what? Yeah. Yes. When you saw Therosa. Yeah.
We saw it. It was so quick. It was so quick too. But we saw this like woman in this dress. But it was like. It was like from like the 1800s or something. Like it looked like an old kind of dress, but like people like I've never seen that kind of dress on a like actual human being in a long time. And like, the thing is that like this woman, I didn't think that she was like I didn't think she was a ghost at first or anything because like she looked like a human. She was like reaching out, and it looked like she was looking like. It looked like, honestly, it looked like she was looking at you, because she was, like, it was not quite looking at me, but, like, she had this, like, this crazy, it wasn't crazy, it was just, like, it was, like, intense, focus, you know, and it looked like she was kind of, like, reaching, or, like, I know she was, like, stepping in our direction, and her hand was kind of out, but then, like, the freaky thing was, like, she didn't, like, flinch at the side, like, there was a truck coming at her, and, like, I remember so clearly, oh my god, the hair of, like, her hair, it's like, long black hair, just brushed up against the window as we were, like, driving by. That's how close she was, you know? I think later we put together that, like, that had to be Therosa, and, like, I think we may have done something. We were working really hard to be respectful that night, to, like, try to, like, not,
right.
You know, upset her in any way, but, clearly, she felt, you know, trespassed upon.
A piece of information I've kind of left out of all of this for you is that this podcast is not only just me telling my stories and you know, these supernatural things. We also started investigating the idea that I may or may not be cursed by...
Oh, yeah, dude, you're definitely cursed.
What?
Yeah, you're definitely cursed. Did you not, like... Dude, I've been saying this for, like, a long time. Like, you're just now coming to this conclusion? Like...
Well, yeah. First of all, I don't know that you've ever said a single word to me about a curse or about witches.
Yes, I did. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? It's like every time that I've ever had a weird experience, it's always been with you, and it's always been, like... I felt, like, tangentially a part of it. Like, it has always been, like... Also, like, the amount of, like, weird shit that happens to you is, like, extraordinarily higher than, like, most people, I would say. You just, like find yourself in weird... It's not even that you find yourself in weird circumstances. Like, weird things happen to you a lot.
Yeah. So, when Marza presented the idea of the curse to me, I actually have been a little bit... what's the best word?
Resistant.
I've been a little bit resistant to all of it. Just because it doesn't sound like something that...
It's so crazy to me. Because, like, I felt like I would always say that you were cursed, but not like, it wasn't like, I don't think I treated it. I legitimately do not recall. But, like, especially after that experience, like...
That leads me to a new question, then. Do you feel like this Therosa stuff has anything to do with this curse, or do you think this is just one more thing that happened? Do you think it's just another piece of the curse? Do you think Therosa's a witch? Do you think, like, what are your thoughts on the connection between this curse that you apparently have always fucking believed in, or which we need to talk more about, because...
No, yeah. But, like, I always said that, like, you were cursed, but it wasn't, like, I didn't believe in ghosts and shit until, you know, I saw one.
Sure. I guess what I'm trying to figure out with Therosa is, how is it connected, or is it? Or was, I mean, you say things like, she's reaching out, she's looking at me kind of past you, she's, I mean, does that have anything?
What if, like, what if, like, the entity that cursed you may have been with you that night? You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know. I don't like to fuck with this stuff, so, like, I say be careful in your investigation of all this, because, like, I don't, like, since that night, I'm like, I don't want to piss anything off that, like, doesn't need to be pissed off of me.
Sure.
Because, I don't know, that's some shit that I can't understand and don't really want to mess with.
I find it really interesting that you're so enthusiastic and so on board with the idea that it's a curse, because I'm still not even sure that I truly am, like, into that.
No, dude, I've been saying that you were cursed since, like, I swear I said this in high school. I know I said this. Like, you can ask Bree if you want to ask Bree, but, like, I'm sure I said that you were cursed.
Okay. Well, good times, man. I really appreciate it. If we need anything else from you, we'll let you know.
Yeah, no problem, man. No problem. Hey, if you ever, you know, in Wichita, let me know.
I will.
I'd love to see you again.
Stay sexy. Don't get murdered.
I'm gonna try not to get murdered.
By now, I'm used to Bailey second-guessing the supernatural, so I wasn't too surprised by his skepticism about the ghostly woman in the white dress. But that's what makes this next story even scarier. This is the earliest story Bailey's ever told me, taking place when he was as young as 4. He thinks it's unrelated to the curse, but I'm not so sure I agree.
And it's not a curse thing. It's not, this is just a weird, this is like my one ghost story. But basically, when I was a kid, I lived in Wichita, and I lived next to this elementary school. And our next door neighbor literally filmed out of her camera, with a video camera, out of her window 24/7. And, like, sometimes you'd, like, walk by and you'd, like, see her, like, kind of peek from the... I never saw her, but I'd see her, like, barely peek through the curtain. Yeah, exactly. Like, all the time. It was the creepiest thing. So I had, like, a weird neighborhood as it was. I was a little latchkey. I was allowed to roam free in this neighborhood pretty much for the most part. I would roam around this campus of this elementary school. It was real small, and they had a playground. So I could play there all day, and my parents could kind of see me from there. But then there was this field with a little knoll, not a hill even, just a little knoll.
A little bump,
and I would lay on that, and sometimes it would get a little late, and as it would start to get dark, I would go in, usually. Or my mom would call. I could hear her very well from there. Because if she couldn't see me, if she stepped outside and couldn't see me, then she'd yell, and I'd come back. Mm-hmm. No problem. And normally I was with other neighborhood kids. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I wasn't, and sometimes I would just go, and I would lay in this very specific spot. And I would lay there all the time, and it was just nice, and I would look up at the sky, and I'm very young. I mean, maybe I'm 5, I feel like I couldn't have been yet, because we moved from that house when I was 5, but I feel like I was there a long time until. So one night, one day, one afternoon, one evening, I'm laying there by myself, and all the other neighborhood kids have gone home, and my brothers aren't out there with me. And it starts to get kind of dark, and I've closed my eyes, and I wake up, not wake up, because I don't fall asleep, but maybe I didn't, but all I know is I close my eyes, and I open them, because I just get this feeling of just, like, something's not okay, and I tilt to the left, and I completely freeze. I look directly into the window of the school, and there's a girl standing there, and she's just looking at me, and she's older than me, much older than me, maybe like 6 years older than me more, and she's just staring at me, and I'm completely frozen because I'm not expecting her to be there. She doesn't look scary. She looks very normal, but she's just in the dark window of the school that is very much shut down on a weekend, right? And I, in my mind, I laid there forever, but I'm sure it was seconds, right?
Yeah.
And then my mom called, and I popped out, and I just ran. and I ran back inside. Now, apparently, according to my mom, I told her that I had seen this, and she sort of dismissed it, like, okay, Bailey's just talking. You know, I just talked as a kid. I did.
He's
I just,
a little kid.
Yeah,
telling
I just
story.
Said things all the time. So I think she was just like, okay, whatever. Turns out, now, this is the part where this is completely true, but this is not necessarily related, but it is freaky that it was so near the time. Within a few months of that, a girl had gone missing. And, within a few months of me seeing this, she had been found in a field, like a few miles away, but she had gone to this elementary school. And it had turned out that the person that had kidnapped her was in the janitorial staff of that school. Okay? So when I was told that story years later, it was because my mom had put those two things together as this weird thing. And she was like, just so you know, remember when you told me this thing when you were a kid? And I went, yes, I think about it all the time. And she said, well, this happened within however many months. And that's according to her. And that was something that you had said that really scared me, but I didn't put anything together because it was...
So you're saying it's, like, within the time. So do you mean you saw her when she would still have been alive?
Yes, because the way my mom tells the timeline is that within the next month or two, because she doesn't remember exact dates, this is when, you know, it was a long time ago, she says, and she told me this when I was, like, 15, 16, right?
Yeah.
She was like, just so you know... Within a few months of that, this girl turned up. So I think she had been missing before I... Like, she had been missing a long time.
She was missing. No one knew where she was.
Right.
You saw a girl in window.
Yes.
After hours.
Yes.
Girl was taken by janitor.
Yes, but there's nothing in the story that has anything to do with, like, him keeping her there or with, like... You know what I mean?
Right.
Or, like, It's very interesting, and it's like maybe I saw her, maybe I didn't, but I was very young and it scared me in the moment.
That's really scary.
So, yeah. So that's a spooky little tidbit, but I was very young when that happened.
Yeah.
Now, could she be the witch and not be the girl who was kidnapped? Those are two totally separate things. I don't know. And maybe she's not, maybe she, I don't know.
In episode 2, as we learned about the signs of Bailey's curse, we learned that he has recurring nightmares. Though I knew that these would be important, I knew that I also didn't know the first thing about dream psychology. So I called in another expert.
So sure, I am an anthropologist by training. My area of interest is cognitive anthropology and symbolic cognitive anthropology. And my area within that is religious and medical anthropology. So why we believe in weird things and the things we do to affect a healthier change in our life. I do that through a site I have called Helping Hospitals Heal. But I also am a performance mentalist, perform at universities and theaters around the country. Doing mind-reading magic shows using what I know about the way people think to control their actions and decipher what they're thinking. So that's my background.
Paul is, in a word, overqualified.
So there are a couple of different ways that I like to look at dream interpretation, just to start with. Mm-hmm. There is sort of a biblical tradition that when you fall asleep, that your spirit leaves, goes somewhere else, right? In the Jewish tradition, you pray to God when you go to sleep and say, if today would have been my last, it would have been enough. And in the morning when you wake up, you say, if today is to be my last, it will have been enough. But during that chunk of time where you're dreaming, you are neither alive nor dead. You are somewhere else. Mm. Your spirit goes somewhere else. And this is why there's a biblical history of, like, Joseph's dreams and interpreting dreams as a part of that context. when we look at dreams from a Jungian perspective, it's all about symbols and about what do these symbols mean and feel to you. To Freud, a cigar isn't always just a cigar, but he says that sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Sure.
My favorite dream interpretation is one where we accept that you are all the characters, that you as the dreamer are everyone, because there isn't someone else in there.
Right.
And so it's a way for the brain to cope with the trials and tribulations going on in your day-to-day life, and that you're trying to work through these ideas. My least favorite is the one that it's just about neuroplasticity, that our brain is simply growing and throwing imagery at us at random,
right,
and we're trying to cope with these random images. There's certainly a school of thought there, but I don't like it. I don't agree with that. So I'll pull from some of those traditions, and let's do it.
In the first dream, Bailey finds himself lying on his back, strapped onto a conveyor belt. He's headed feet first to an unknown destination. He can only see above him, where there stand, waving as he passes, his favorite fictional characters. Big Bird, the crone iteration of Snow White's evil queen, Grumpy Bear, Christopher Lloyd as Fester Adams, and Christopher Lloyd as Doc Brown.
At what age group were you in when this was happening?
When I first started having it, I was probably 5, 6, 7. Had just moved into a new house, and was having it a lot. And I probably had it till I was, I want to say like 10, 11, 12, like early preteen. Yeah.
And nobody in your family worked in an industrial job with conveyor belts, right?
No. No.
So your only impact with conveyor belts really at that age would be like at grocery stores and in cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a cartoon or video game expression of moving from one place to another.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really interesting that you say this happened primarily right after you had moved.
Right.
Also, our brains can only cope with a very limited number of people, right? As there was a fellow named Robin Dunbar, a physical anthropologist, who came up with the idea of the Dunbar number, of how many people we can store in our brains. And we slough off people to replace them with other people because we have such a limited number.
Mm-hmm.
That's why someone we were very close to in grade school, we may not remember their name anymore because they've been replaced by somebody else.
Right.
We fill a lot of these slots with celebrities in our brain because they're an individual that we connect with, we go on an emotional arc with, we go on adventures with, and they become real people. They become friends that we care about. And so you have transitioned to a new place. You weren't afraid of the new place, but you didn't know where you were going. You didn't know who the new friends were going to be in this place. And so you carried some of your old friends with you, and you didn't know if these old friends that you were dreaming about, you mentioned Shredder, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but they're representative of real people. If these individuals are coming with you, if they're going to be there when you get there, like your stuffed animals and your books and other things showed up, or if they were just people that you were passing by and releasing. So I can see for sure a reason why this dream would happen right after a transition to a new place, as you have an uncertain future. I think it's very neat that you aren't afraid of that uncertain future, that you went in and said, you know, I'm ready to take this and go wherever it is, and I'm not scared. But who are going to be my friends in my neighborhood when you go to this new place?
Right.
And so that would be my first take on that.
The next dream requires a bit of setup.
Until I was about 10 years old, I truly believed that I could float. And I, based mostly because in my dreams I could float, and it happened all the time. And I would, something stressful in a dream was happening, I would just float, and then I was above that stress, right? And it was gone. So then in real life, I basically convinced myself that if something bad was happening, oh, I could just float above this. I'm not going to, but I could.
In the dream, Bailey's getting ready for a pool party, swimsuit and arm floaties and all. For some reason, he's in the Town East Wichita Mall, and suddenly it's empty. He's alone. Looking for the others, he descends a staircase into a dark room, and he finds himself floating in the darkness, as if the darkness were water. From the depths, strange shadowy creatures creep up the sides of the room, but he knows they can't get him, and he's not afraid.
I like it as a way that you talk about that it's a way to get above other things and have perspective. Mm-hmm. That I think a lot of the time in your dreams, you like we talked about at the start of this, your dreams are ways to cope with the complex world and environment around you. And so it gives you a new perspective. Do I need to be afraid of these big empty spaces like the mall? No, I can float above it and I can see it all. Do I need to be afraid of the dark and the unknown things that are out there? You accept that there are unknowns, but you also accept that you are choosing that you don't have to be afraid. Because you are aware of it, and it is separate. It is other than what's going on with you, and it is other than where you are. And so I would say a lot of that is the shadow people, right, is what this is that you're coping with, there is another out in the darkness, and I know it's there, and I know it's an element of the world, but it's not something that I need to face or cope with, that you don't need to be Batman right now, that you're okay with floating above it and being somewhere else and being the other. I think it's a pretty healthy dream.
For this last dream, I want you to hear Bailey tell it.
The first time I ever had it, I woke up really not okay. But I was probably like 4 or 5. I'm like very young.
Very early memory.
Yes. Later. And I vividly remember... It's always, now it's a little different, but at the time, it was always this little shack out in the woods, and I could kind of see it from the outside before I realized I was inside of it. So it was sort of like, almost like I had a first-person perspective. I was looking at this shed, and then all of a sudden I'd be inside the shed.
Like you're transported, or like you was watching a movie?
Almost like watching a movie. I watched so many movies as a kid that mm-hmm. I think that's just sort of how I dreamed. It was just in these images and in transitions. It was like it was all edited, right? So I would be looking at something and then I'd be inside of it. It wasn't a transportation. It was just like I knew I was inside of it even as I was watching it. Yeah, it was an exposition. But it was like I knew I was inside of it even as I saw what I was.
Spooky cabin in the woods. Exterior,
right.
Night.
Exactly.
Cut 2. Yeah.
And then I'm in it. And I'm sitting in my mom's lap. Mm-hmm. Now when I have this dream, I'm not in my mom's lap. I'm alone and there's nowhere to sit. But it used to be.
So you're just like standing?
Now I just
in the
stand.
Of the room?
Yeah.
Like
it's
you're
also
at a party where you don't know anybody.
Yes, but it's also like. Yeah, it's also like a almost like porta potty size. Like it's small.
Oh.
It's like It's like my shoulders are almost touching the walls.
So not like cabin. It's like
no,
a little
like a shed, like a hut, like a tiny little. The best way to describe it is like an old timey Western porta potty.
Like an outhouse.
Like an outhouse.
Like no one could live in it.
No, it's very, very small. There's only enough room for my mom to sit on this little bench that's in there that doesn't exist in my dream now. I had
now
to stand.
It's just empty.
But it used to be that there was not a bench, but like it was attached to both walls. It was just a plank that she could sit on, and I would sit. That's very detailed, but I remember it so vividly. And I would sit on her lap, and there was one window. And that's the only place where light would come in. So to get light, my mom would lift me up and we would, it was to our left, I remember that. She would always turn to our left and we'd have to look out this window to see if it was okay to leave and to get light or whatever we were trying to do. But every time we would, we'd look down and there'd be a woman, a big woman, sitting in a chair. And she had a ponytail. And
like a high ponytail.
No, like a low, like she, the best way to describe her, and this is going to make it sound like, oh, Bailey was just afraid of, like, physical activity, but was, like, she was, like, a gym teacher. She was, like, she looked like, sometimes she had a whistle around her neck, sometimes she didn't. Sometimes she was wearing, like, athletic clothes, sometimes she was wearing sweatpants, sweatshirt.
Did she have, like, a general color palette?
Gray. Always in, like, gray and white, and she would look up with this really mean face, as if, like, you're not allowed to be looking out, you're not allowed to come out. And then we would pull back and not look at her anymore. It was sort of, and then we'd sit there for a while, and then we'd turn and look again. And sometimes, after, like, a few looks, we'd look, and her eyes would be glowing red. And I'd always wake up right after her eyes were glowing red. That was, like, what would always kind of spark me awake. It would scare me.
So she's just, like, sitting in front, like, in a chair?
So, like, if you can picture, like, if you were standing next to a window that's very small, like, maybe, like, 1 by 1 foot.
Okay.
Okay? And you're looking down out the window to the ground, straight to the ground from outside of the window. And if you look down, there's just a woman sitting in a chair facing away from you. But she's turning to her right, looking up at you.
That's really creepy.
Looking over her right shoulder up at you.
Guarding it.
It's like she's guarding you. But your door is in front of you.
Okay.
There is a door, but it doesn't seem to be able to be opened from the inside.
Does it have, like, a handle?
I've never tried. No.
So it's just like a...
It looks like I should be able to push it open, but there's no light coming in from anywhere, so it doesn't seem like it's open either. But I've never in a dream tried to open it. I've never, even in when I have the dream now, all that ever happens is I look and I see her. Actually, sometimes she's not there. Sometimes I look and there's nothing there, but I know I still can't leave and I just have to stand there.
Do you feel like she's, like, around?
Yeah, it's like she's a presence there somehow. But that's, what's interesting is that it's like she doesn't look like anybody I've ever known. And I've been told, and I mean, I don't know how true this is, but I've been told that in dreams, you can't ever see some a face you haven't seen, but you can composite faces.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And so I was like, maybe I'm doing that, but she doesn't look like anybody I've ever known in my life. I'm very good with faces.
I gotta say, what I have in my head right now is the trunchbull from Matilda.
Sort of, but not actually. What's weird is not as scary of a person.
Oh,
not as big.
Okay.
Not as big. She's like stout.
Okay.
Like short and stout and has like nice blonde hair and a ponytail that's kind of graying. She's a little older.
Blonde. I was picturing like brown.
Like dusty blonde, dark blonde hair that's turning gray. And she turns, it's always the same woman. That's the only reason I have such a vivid picture of her. But when she looks up in the moment, there's always sort of that like, oh, she's an okay person. Even though I know the dream, there's the moment before she looks up at me where I'm like, oh, it's a person. Come help us. This normal-looking person. And then she looks up and she's not normal at all and she's scary. But she has an okay face. She doesn't look like a trunchbull, like, scary, mean person.
Do you think, have you ever thought that she was, like, protecting you from something?
That's very possible, but she... That's interesting. That's very possible, but it's just the vibe that I get from her that she's not safe either. So I don't, you know, if like we're not safe from her. But that's really interesting because something there's this in Kansas, there's this juncture. What's the fucking word? There's like a little town junction where you can choose between two paths, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's sort of famous because it's just so specific. And there's two arrows, and one says freedom, and one says protection, okay? And I've taken 100 pictures of this thing because every time I see it, I'm like, this is amazing. But it says freedom or protection. And the or is actually okay because it's saying freedom, Oklahoma, but it's been turned into an R. Somebody's done that somehow. So it looks like freedom or protection. Instead of freedom, Oklahoma, protection, Kansas, to the right. So, yeah. So it created, whenever we would see it, we would have this like philosophical discussion, like what would you choose? And the idea is that with protection, you do not get freedom. And with freedom, you do not get protection. And my answer is always freedom. I choose freedom over protection always. But then this dream, I think that's funny that you bring that up because it is sort of like, is she protecting me but I have no freedom?
Right, well, there's a lot of elements of protection, I feel like. Mm-hmm. You're in the woods, but you have a little thing. Like, you're now as an adult, you're alone, but when you were a kid and you were like a defensible kid, you had your mom.
Well, and I've been...
So you've got a whistle that's like alerting you to danger.
Sure. And I've been lost in the woods before.
This room is a shield, right? This is three little pigs. It's not out of straw, but it's also not out of brick.
Right.
You feel safe about it, but it's you know that it's still just glass and wood. We do create spaces like this in every culture and tradition. We have, you know, sort of sanctuary buildings or rings of salt that protect us from the baddie that is waiting outside.
Right.
A whistle is really about, not about a gym teacher as much as it is the ability to make a really shrill sound. And so I don't know what you're connecting that to, but she is doing two things that shouldn't be in the woods at night, one of which is the ability to make really loud, shrill sounds, which you don't have the ability to, and the other is the ability to glow and create her own light, something that you don't have the ability to. The glowing red eyes comes from, you know, of course, Hollywood. I mean, we have so much Ichabod Crane and, you know, characters that have the, or The Last Unicorn, or I don't know what the movie was from your childhood.
Right.
Where the red eyes mean that. But she's not about to pounce. She's merely there. And she never attacks you. She's not beating on the walls, beating on the doors. We have to remember, truly, that all characters in the dream are also you, right? This woman does not exist.
Right.
You're playing the part of both, especially when you're saying that you can see the outside of the shed.
Mm.
Well, you are everybody. I mean, you are you. You are your mom. You are the shed. You are this woman.
Well, there you have it. Bailey's the witch. If only just in his dreams. Or nightmares. So Paul didn't hear that exact recording. While he knows the contents of the nightmare, we never told him about the freedom or protection sign.
This is about indecision. What action do I need to take? Right, where the conveyor belt is taking you somewhere and you have no power over it. The floating is your choosing to float, to be above and outside of it. This one, you're stuck, and it's indecision. Decide, am I going to speak to her? Am I going to look at her? Am I going to step out? Am I going to stay here? Am I going to wait till morning? A lot of this, the fear that comes from this dream is about indecision, you deciding what action you need to take.
Paul's analyses have given us a lot to chew on, but we couldn't let him go without a little bit of magic.
So here, I have a deck of cards here. Bailey.
Okay.
Name any card for me.
Ace of Spades.
Ace of Spades. You know, that's a dangerous card because that's often the death card, right?
Oh, no.
I don't know. But here, I'm going to spread it. Go across the card. Say maybe stop anytime you want.
Stop.
Right there. Right there. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, now look. I want to show you. All the cards are different. We have a full deck of cards, fully shuffled.
Yeah.
You stopped on one card and one card only.
I don't like it.
Death card.
Death card.
Now, it's all fun and games when you pick the death card once. But do you guys remember the divination we did with a deck of playing cards? After Paul did this trick, I went back and watched the video, and I freaked out. And if you saw the video on our Facebook, I bet you're freaking out too. The very first ace that Bailey dealt? Ace of Spades. Death card. Bailey Was Cursed by a Witch was created, written, edited, and produced by J. Bailey Burcham and me, Martha Worsinski. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Bailey Was Cursed. Or email us at baileywascursed@gmail.com. Original songs by Adam James and Austin Archer. No man knows. Logo designed by Ken Worsinski. Well enough to hate me more than me. Plenty others tried and failed, believe me. There's a thought that can't be bought, coerced, or taught to lie.
Can't be taught to lie.